anyway.
Well, good morning. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9:05, a little late today, but anyway, it's the 2nd of April, 2007. With me today is Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson. We'll be joined here shortly by Senator Hoffman. We're going to have two bills today on that are up, Senate Bill 130, relating to vehicle registration of certain ranch, farm, and dairy vehicles. And then when we finish that, we'll move on to a presentation on Senate Bill number 4, revisions of the senior care program. With that, I'd like to go ahead and start the work on Senate Bill 130, registration for certain ranch, farm, and dairy vehicles. The intent is to go ahead and move this bill. With us to introduce the bill today is Mr. Darwin Peterson. The bill is sponsored by Senator Lyda Green, who Mr. Peterson works for. And we'll have some additional invited testimony after the presentation from Duane Bannock. He's the director of the State Division of Motor Vehicles. And we'll go on to our normal routine of dialogue. That, Mr. Peterson, if you can go ahead and present the bill, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. Appreciate your time this morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for scheduling this this bill and taking the time to hear it. Senator Green apologizes for not being available this morning, but with your indulgence, I'll just give you a brief rundown on the purpose of this legislation and answer any questions the committee may have. Senate Bill 130, the need for it was brought to Senator Green's attention from a constituent of hers in Palmer who is a farmer. In state statute, there are a number of different special vehicle registrations that are allowed. One of them is vehicle registrations and farm and plates for farm vehicles. The purpose behind this special registration is so that farmers can use their vehicles on their ranch and also within the vicinity of their ranch at a cheaper registration because they use it for the purpose of their ranch. The majority of the time the vehicle is used is for ranch work and farm work. Prior to 1978, the weight limit for a farm vehicle was 12,000 pounds. Around 1978, that was changed to the current weight limit in statute, which is 16,000 pounds. Looking back in the history, the record isn't very clear, but it's apparent that the reason for that change in 1978 was because vehicles were just getting larger. And for the same reason, Senator Green has decided that it's justifiable to go ahead and ask the legislature for an increase in weight for farm vehicles from 16,000 pounds to 20,000 pounds because vehicles are just getting larger. And many of the farmers are finding themselves bumping up against that cap, and the traditional vehicles that the companies are coming out with for use on farms and ranches are above that weight limit. And many of the farmers that I've spoken with, I believe one of them is online today from Delta Junction, have stated that they found themselves in a situation where they're using old 70s, 80s vehicles and not updating them with new equipment for the purpose of not increasing their vehicle weight over 16,000 pounds. So this legislation is very simple and straightforward, Mr. Chairman. Simply put, it's raising the vehicle weight limit for a farm vehicle to be registered in statute from 16,000 pounds to 20,000 pounds. And I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the delta between the what farmers pay and what they would normally other people would pay for the same vehicle?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, a biennial registration for a farm vehicle is $68, and Duane Bannock is online to answer the second half of your question as to what the delta is between farm vehicles and regular vehicles.
Maybe if we could, we'll bring on Mr. Duane Bannock. Mr. Bannock, if you can please identify yourself and who you work for.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Duane Bannock. I'm today representing the Division of Motor Vehicle. Thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on this bill. The Division of Motor Vehicles has no objection to this bill, and perhaps if I could just jump to the answer to the senator's question. Weight ranges, commercial vehicle registration for a 20,000-pound vehicle is generally $240 every 2 years for biannual registration. That's the state of Alaska fee. There is also another fee that may be put on a vehicle depending on where its physical location is for local government fees, but the state of Alaska fee, I believe, is $240 for a 20,000-pound vehicle.
Senator Dyson, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Is the farm registration, what's the period on registration for that?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, 2 years, sir.
All right, thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that regardless of number of axles? We don't take those into consideration on farm vehicles?
Senator, if that question was directed to the DMV does not measure on axles, just unladen weight, sir.
And is that because it's not your purview, or you do, but in this case it's not?
No, sir, it's not part of, we take our statutory authority from Alaska Statute 28, and there's nothing in that section pertaining to number of axles.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? We have a zero physical note in front of us. Do you have any, Mr. Bannock, do you have any, is there going to be any additional costs that your department's going to face, or why are we looking at a zero physical note?
Senator, the reason that we submitted that zero physical note is the programming that will be required to be done in-house. There's only one table that has to be changed. The actual inputting of this is done manually, so whether or not my employee manually inputs a weight limit of 16,000 pounds or a weight limit of, I should say a weight, actual weight of 16,000 pounds or an actual weight of 20,000 pounds. And then the reason that we didn't adjust anything on the revenue side is there's approximately 600 of these vehicles on the road today. So with measuring an increase of, let's say, 10%, the fiscal note would be in the hundreds of dollars.
Senator
Olson.
Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the Department of Motor Vehicles may not have an increase in its in the costs that are going to be there. What about other departments? I guess specifically the Department of Transportation that may be looking at more road maintenance with a heavy vehicle that's going to be traversing the highway, especially looking at that 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was almost half that amount was allowed at 12,000 pounds. Now it's up to 20,000.
This is Dwayne at the DMV. Senator, I can't address that question for DOT. Give me.
Maybe the bill sponsor can do that.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have spoke with DOT and they do not have any objection to this legislation. They think that the impact would be quite minimal.
Fiscal impact.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions from the committee? We have no one online, and is there anybody in the audience that would like to come forward and speak on the bill at hand? Seeing none, do we have any other questions, concerns? Senator Dyson.
I'm sorry, was one of the farmers going to testify?
I have nobody on the sign-in sheet, and I have nobody on the off-net list. Yes.
Senator Olson. I guess on along that same line, have we heard from those people that are directly affected by this as to whether it's going to be a positive thing, negative thing, or whether they don't care or not, or don't even know?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, also in an effort to answer Senator Dyson's question, in the previous committee in Senate Transportation, we had Steve Van Troba as a farmer in Senator Green's district in Palmer. He was online, and he was the one who actually brought the need for this legislation to our attention. He was obviously very supportive. He goes down to Canada quite often to pick up hay for his ranch, and another purpose for this legislation is when he goes into Canada, if his vehicle is not registered as a farm vehicle, and under statute it fits every criteria for for a farm vehicle. He uses it to pick up hay for his personal ranch. They charge him $600 per trip to go into Canada. If it was a farm vehicle, there wouldn't be a charge. So he's in Canada right now picking up hay, so he can't be online today. The other person who testified in favor of this in Senate Transportation was Bill Ward from Delta Junction, and he's strongly in favor of the legislation too. And he was the one who brought to our attention the fact that he's fixing up some of his old vehicles and using them on the highway. They're not nearly as safe as the new vehicles he would like to buy, but the new vehicles are too heavy. So both of those gentlemen did testify in favor, and I spoke with Mr. Ward on Friday. He said he had a very busy day today, but he was going to try and be available at the Delta Junction LIO. I apologize for his absence, but he must be busy today.
Yes, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Well, now we've gotten to the real reason for this and why I will support it. Otherwise, the difference in cost was $85 a year, which I don't think would be an overwhelming burden for any of our farmers. But paying the $600 fee when they cross the border is, you know, and is sufficient reason for me to support this.
Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Huggins, could you make a motion, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill number 130, version Charlie, with individual comments as amended and attached physical note, be moved from committee.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill on to the next committee, which is the Rules Committee. We're going to take a brief at ease while we get set up for the next bill. We have a new physical note on the next bill, so we're going to take a quick brief at ease, and we'll be back in 2-3 minutes. We'll come back on the record. We're going to go ahead and bring up Senate Bill 4, revisions to the senior care program. What we're going to have today is a hearing. We're going to sort through some of the fiscal notes and a few other things. We're not going to move the bill. There's some more work that needs to be done, but it will give the sponsor the opportunity to get the bill on the table and then for us to get an initial exposure to cost-benefit analysis of what we have in front of us. This is a fairly substantial policy issue facing the legislature along with physical impact. And we're trying to, like I mentioned earlier, clarify some of that. But with us today, we have Senator Olson, who's going to go ahead and present to the committee. And if Senator Olson would go ahead and present the bill, and I think he has a CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I initially pre-filed Senate Bill 4 to go ahead and work in combination with the longevity bonus program bill that I had initially submitted, but then had withdrawn after the governor submitted her longevity bonus bill. And this is to pick up those people that maybe weren't signed up with the longevity bonus roster back when it was implemented 20 years ago or so. Since then, what has happened is that the longevity bonus has been mired down a little bit, and so this is a bill that we've tried to go ahead and make it to help those elders that are out there that are having to deal with the high cost of electricity, the high cost of heating their homes, and just the bills that are coming at them in general. We've been working closely with the other body, Representative Hawker and his office, to try and make sure we get the best bill forward that is going to be acceptable to both sides, as well as to help, especially with the main focus of helping the elderly that are out there. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and bring up my senior legislative aide, Ginny Osterman, to go ahead and present the bill. She's been working intimately with the other body to try and make sure, as well as the department, to try and make sure that we get the best bill forward.
Senator Olson, would you please move the CS?
Okay. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I go ahead and move CS for Senate Bill 4, which is /C.
Okay. We have, as our working document, we have a motion. Any objections to version C? Seeing no objections, we have C on the version C on the table. Ms. Osterman, if you can go ahead and present the bill, walk us through it, and we'll just kind of piece it together, work our way into the fiscal notes, and have some participation with some folks in, behind you.
My name is Jenny Osterman. I'm staff to Senator Donald Olson. Senate Bill 4 extends the senior care program, which provides financial assistance to Alaska's low-income seniors. SB 4 does three things to the senior care program. It extends the program's sunset date to June 30, 2011, removes the underutilized prescription drug benefit, and increases the monthly cash benefit based on their income related to the federal poverty level guidelines adjusted for Alaska. Monthly payments are $175 per month if the individual's household income does not exceed 100% of the federal poverty guidelines for Alaska, $150 per month if the individual's household income does not exceed 135 but is above 100% of the federal poverty guidelines for Alaska, $100 per month if the individual's household income does not include or does not exceed 150 but is above 135% of the federal poverty guidelines for Alaska. The senior care program is strictly a needs-based program. No asset test will be in place. SB 4 covers eligible seniors who may have been a part of the longevity bonus program prior to its funding being eliminated, as well as individuals who meet the eligibility criteria. The Department of Health and Social Services estimates that the senior care program currently serves approximately 7,000 seniors with financial assistance. The department estimates an additional 1,800 seniors will qualify for senior care under SB 4. The senior care program would run concurrently, but not in addition to any longevity bonus program that may be redeveloped. An individual who is receiving a longevity bonus payment is not eligible for the benefits of the senior care program.
So I take it that concludes your presentation?
That concludes my presentation.
Okay. In summary, Mr. Chairman, what we've pointed out is that the sunset is extended to 2011. It's a needs-based only bill with no asset test that's there. The range is between $175 and $100, with $150 in between, depending on where you fit into the federal poverty level, between 150% and obviously 100%, and it affects approximately 7,000 seniors that would be eligible. And if the longevity bonus program is implemented, if you participate in that, you're not eligible for this senior care assistance. And that's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Senator Elton.
Thanks. To the sponsor, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I heard this bill previously in another committee, and is the substantive difference between the committee, or the sponsor substitute, is it the kind of the gradations of eligibility and the payment? Is that the only difference between this version and the original version?
Actually, there are a number, Mr. Chairman, if I could. There are a number of differences. One has to do with there was no sunset initially on Senate Bill 4. This has a 2011 sunset. And the one of the thinking behind that is that you want to make sure that if you do have a situation where things are occurring that you didn't anticipate, you have some type of review in a number of years. You hit the meat of it right on the head there with the gradation that goes between $100 and $175 payable to those people, depending on where they fit into the scheme. And this was done in coordination with the other body's bill that had been put forth in the House. And the other significant difference is no asset test. It's a needs-based only, so you depend on what your yearly income is going to be dependent on whether you're eligible. And the main thing for that had to do with those seniors that had saved up some cash, and has to be liquid assets in particular, where they were saving for things like a funeral to make sure that they weren't encumbering their families with some type of hidden cost right there at the end, were not going to be inhibited from participating in this program just because they were planning ahead. And I'll go ahead and turn it on over to Ms. Osterman to go ahead and fill in the details.
The other thing, through the chair, Senator Elton, the other thing that is different is that the original version of SB 4 did continue with freezing the federal poverty level guidelines at 2005 level. That has been eliminated, and there is no longer that aspect of this bill.
Do we have any other initial questions? Dave. Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chairman, it may be in here, but just so I can write them down quickly, do we have the numbers that go with 100%, 135, and 150 as far as what the income level is for an individual?
I don't have those. Perhaps the department would have that information.
It appears that the poverty level in the fiscal note in 05 is 16,133 for an individual and 21,641 for a couple, but we'll bring forward the commissioner to double check that.
Mr. Chairman, the number you gave, was that for 100% or?
That was 100%. Okay. I think that's in the fiscal, but we'll flush that out here. We'll have maybe Carlene Jackson could come forward from the commissioner. And,
thanks, Jeannie.
Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. In person, by the way. You could please introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Carlene Jackson, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. And with me, I have the fiscal expert, Janet Clark, our Assistant Commissioner for Finance and Management.
Could you please, Ms. Clark, go over the federal guidelines for poverty guidelines for a single and a couple, and then where those amounts would be with the multiples on?
Yes, for the record, Janet Clark, the Department of Health and Social Services. The 2007 federal poverty guidelines for Alaska have, for a family size of one, the annual income is $12,770. and for $217,120. That's at 100% of poverty, if that helps you. At 135% of poverty, obviously, you just you can multiply that as well, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any other questions or comments? Senator Thomas?
I was going to say we have a letter that has that in it, too, if you didn't get the numbers down, this two-page Jenny's letter, I guess, or to Jenny from Deborah Craig. Yes.
Senator Huggins?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I like this bill, and I think it serves a very useful purpose. My one concern is there appears to be maybe a sizable group of senior citizens that don't like to come in under the title of needy. Just wondering what the department's thoughts on that are, or if am I just hearing from a couple, three people?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, there are seniors that feel that way. There are Alaskans across the state that feel that way. And unfortunately, so many of our federal programs are also needs-based that, you know, we try to be respectful in how we talk about these programs. But the reality is this is a needs-based program. And like the permanent fund dividend, should someone choose not to apply, they don't have to. But we, with as much respect as possible, try to offer this to seniors that, in fact, do have a financial need. But you're correct. There are those that feel that way.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
The other part is my assumption is that if a person identifies himself for this program, it's not necessarily public information, or is it?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I know that the longevity bonus information at certain times was deemed to be public. On needs-based program, particularly those governed by the federal government, have quite a bit more deference to confidentiality. This would be a state-only program, so I would have to ask the experts who might be here whether they know that or not, or we'll have to get a ruling from Department of Law on that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just as a quick note, we have in our packet from Deborah Craig, Department of Health, to Ginny Osterman, some questions and analysis. It's two pages. That has a table on those rates with the multiples on it.
And Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, we do have Ellie Fitzgerald, the Public Health or Public Assistance Director, who can speak to the last question.
Okay, Ms. Fitzgerald, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you work for and enlighten us, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ellie Fitzgerald. I am the Director for the Division of Public Assistance. And in regards to the question about the information sharing for the senior care program, individual client information is not available without specific releases of information. However, it is available by numbers of individuals per community that are receiving the program benefit.
We have other initial questions from the committee. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the department kind of briefly discuss the interplay? If we make an assumption that this bill passes and that we reinstitute the longevity bonus program, given the new gradations, I mean, how many people do you see participating in this program that might otherwise be participating in the longevity bonus program? But not at the full $250 level. I mean, what's the byplay in numbers here?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we originally, with the original bill, did do a match between senior care and the longevity bonus information as it existed, you know, almost 4 years ago or 3 years ago. I don't believe we've run it against this new table that shows the difference in the poverty guidelines. We could do that to show the interplay, Originally, I think what we saw is if you assume that someone who was getting senior care was getting $120 per month and wouldn't want to drop to $100 per month because some were for longevity bonus, I think we identified 2,300 individuals who would probably retain their longevity bonus income. So we can certainly run a scenario for you based on this new particular iteration.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the we've just got this fiscal note. Do you have? Are you prepared to go ahead and even make some preliminary comments on what the fiscal note is that has just been presented to us?
And when you do that, can you please reference the original fiscal note?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson. The original fiscal note that was submitted in mid-May for Senate Bill 4 was a negative fiscal note. The reason that it was a negative fiscal note, because at that time we were comparing to the governor's budget, which included both longevity bonus and senior care, still in the budget. Since that time, obviously things have changed, and also that negative fiscal note was quite confusing to describe the impact of senior care. So the fiscal note that we delivered this morning, the draft revision, was for the original bill. I'd like to be clear about that, as it came out of the HES committee, Senate Bill 4. This is to show you what extending the current program based on the original Senate Bill 4 would cost, and that is a total of, for FY08, $13,148,100. So the original fiscal note was built on some assumptions that really aren't in play anymore, and I don't think it's really fruitful to discuss that original negative fiscal note. So this would replace that, and again, I apologize to the committee. We should have done this revised fiscal note between now and then, and it just slipped through the cracks, so we've done that this morning.
And then we'll have a revision of the revised fiscal note to match up with the version C we have in front of us. We'll get that scrubbed up here in the next several days. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We did provide a one-page summary to Senator Olson's office for version / C that you had adopted. Which showed that the benefit costs plus administration, the total cost of this CS would be $17,398,900. So it is a little over $4 million higher than the original Senate Bill 4.
And we'll continue to work on scrubbing those numbers as you have time to thoroughly analyze the new CS and work it through the system. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to be really clear here. The sponsor's statement in the bottom of the page, it says the senior care program would run concurrently but not in addition to any longevity bonus program that may be developed. And from that I imply that people wouldn't be getting paid out of both. And could you direct me to the section of the bill that makes that clear?
Mr. Chairman, I'll have my senior aide come on up here and answer that question if I could.
Thank you. Ms. Osterman, when you're.
I see it on page 2, line 10. Is that it?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
All right, thank you. And I'll have one additional comment here at the end of our hearing on this today, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And again, just a reminder, we're not taking any action today. We're trying to get the issue on the table. And as we can see that there's some fiscal note work to do and a little bit more consequences. We have other questions for the sponsor or the administration? Has anybody called in? Expecting one offline. Pretty quiet out there in Alaska land today. So, any closing comments, Senator Olson?
Do you want to comment on the
and then we'll go to
ERP's stand on this?
Yeah.
Through the chair, yes, Alaska AARP is definitely in favor of this legislation.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I was very interested in the fiscal note and what's developing here. And for the last 3 years at least, I've been asking that we develop some kind of a criteria for evaluating capital projects, and I've been very interested in us having a fiscal plan. And until we do so, it's going to be difficult for me to, you know, vote for significant increases to our operating budget without that. And this one looks like $13 or $17 million annual increase, and with understanding what I think is our fiscal future, you know, next 8 or 10 years, I think we need to proceed very carefully with institutionalizing, you know, increases in our operating budget. That's all.
Senator Elton.
Well, I appreciate the comments by Senator Dyson, because I think he has hit on one of the first responsibilities that we as legislators have. I think, though, that one of the things that is difficult as we make these decisions, it is very easy for us to run our finger down the cost column. I think the executive branch does a wonderful job of outlining what the costs are going to be in the next fiscal year and in succeeding fiscal years. But what is often difficult is there is no column that runs that outlines the benefits. And so as we deal with these issues, especially as we deal with issues that affect seniors who are no longer tied to the state by employment, what we often find is that they make life decisions that can affect the rest of us, those who own restaurants, those who own car lots, those who own other businesses, because especially when you find people that are close to the edge, as defined here in this bill, you find people having to make economic decisions that mean they might move to Missouri or Arkansas or North Dakota or someplace else where their retirement income can sustain them. And so what happens is those people who do leave the states, the state of Alaska, for economic reasons, they're spending their investment dollars, they're spending their health dollars, they're spending their retirement dollars elsewhere. And that does have a negative effect on the state of Alaska. So I think it is appropriate to look at the cost column. But I think, as my mother would say, if you tug on the shorts at one end of the clothesline, the shirts at the other end jump. And we need to be really careful that we understand what the economic consequences are if we encourage people to relocate elsewhere and spend their dollars, their retirement dollars, elsewhere.
To the earlier comment from Senator Dyson on, you know, on the interest in slowing the growth of the operating budget, which over the last 3 years at this table has grown not quite exponentially, but it's roughly about a third, is problematic with what appears to be coming down the road at us. So we're trying to hold the operating account growth down. It's extremely difficult to reduce it below the previous year, you know, as we go forward. But we're going to be concentrating on slowing it down and then trying to go into the formula-driven areas and try to deal with those so we don't end up with basically a runaway train at our table here. So that is definitely a concern that we're looking at. And I've worked with Senator Olson here the last few weeks on his bill, trying to do what we can to have a minimum fiscal impact when we look at the discussion of the bill and do the balancing effect of the social issues that we're faced with our seniors and the fiscal impact we're dealing with in the operating accounts. And I'm hopeful that all the operating subcommittee chairmen's will be in the Senate side. Will be bringing in numbers that are takes that into account over the next couple of days as we put our operating account together and compare it with the House and the governor. Senator, guys.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and it's kind of what I expected from the chair, because you understand fiscal matters better than most. And as we evaluate each one of these individually, you know, we can see the benefits, and there's a defined constituent group out there that, in this particular case, most of us are very sympathetic to. What I worry about is 3, 4, 5 years from now, that our situation will be, if not desperate, so difficult that we will have to either take draconian cuts in many of these programs, including some of the formula-driven ones, or go to a state sales tax or income tax, you know, either of which the sales tax will have a disproportionate impact on people living on the margin, and an income tax will put what I would consider a disproportionate burden on folks that are working, who we want to encourage and keep here. And that's why not having the long look at where we're headed fiscally, that there's a couple of bills out there, and then how in the world we're going to deal with that. You know, I think it's irresponsible for us to not be looking at the long look here, and I appreciate the chair's concern about this. And I think we all need to realize that this budget that we're dealing with here on the operating side is going to be at least $600 million more than last year's, or very close to that, even with what the governor's somewhat heroic and maybe a chaotic, what's the expression you use when you're talking about Don Quixote? You know,
it's not chaotic.
Pardon?
It's not chaotic.
Not chaotic, but really tilting with a windmill that's extraordinarily difficult. And that's a responsibility we have at this table, you know, is to not only look at the individual things here, but somehow or the other have a matrix to look at the total impact and the out years. And it is a very difficult responsibility that we have sitting right here. And I appreciate that.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we go ahead and look around this table and appreciate the views that were expressed by the chairman and Senator Dyson, as we look around this table, we see a lot of gray hair, and we see a lot of wrinkled skin and people with less hair, which makes me point out that one of these days we're going to be under, if we live long enough, we're going to be under this type of a senior care situation. And at least my responsibility and my hope is that for myself, as well as those people that are out there that I'm affecting, especially in rural Alaska, is they want to stay home as long as they can with any kind of financial assistance that allows that. Senator Elton talked about those people that couldn't afford to live here anymore and are moving out of state. I want to point out the fact that there are people that are living here that are barely on the edge, that are marginalized. This assistance allows them to go ahead and stay at home, because the cost to the state is going to be significantly increased if you have to institutionalize these people, and that's where you're going to see the increased cost. Back when we have this hiatus between the oil that's coming down the Trans-Alaska pipeline and the building of and the revenues that are going to be coming from the natural gas pipeline. And so I think this is one of those bills that allows those people to stay at home longer.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further analysis of the fiscal note. So we can see there's always concerns on those issues and other policy issues internally within it that may be flushed out as we re-review the CS. And we'll take a look at this bill in another day, or at another time in the future, I guess, sir. Tomorrow at 7:30 a.m., bright and early, the Committee of the Whole will gather to review the University of Alaska's subcommittee closeout report and take action on that. Following that, at 9 a.m., we're going to talk about Senate Bill 62, Healthcare Task Force. So we'll take a look at that, and we'll have a quick brief at ease here. Thank everybody for coming today and appreciate their comments and meeting adjourned.